Welcome back to Highly Successful Couples, the podcast that helps couples grow together instead of growing apart. I'm your host, Nick Solacek, and today we are going to talk about repair and reconnection. If you have moments in your relationship that simply don't feel good, issues that are unresolved, maybe you experience unwanted behaviors from time to time, or your partner keeps doing this thing that creates upset, tension in your relationship, you struggle to understand each other and connect on the things that matter most, then tune into today's show. We're going to talk about the three main cycles of relationship. We're going to talk about how these play a role in our relationship over time, how we can apologize effectively with sincerity, how we can take ownership of our behavior and look towards our past, look towards our relationship experience and our childhood to make more sense of the things that go on sometimes, the things that might disturb our psyche, things that might make us feel anxious or stressed, to make sense of this stuff so we can move past it. We can grow together as allies, become allies in each other's healing and growth, which is one of the ways that I look at being in a conscious relationship, or what some people call a connected relationship, adult partnership. So let's just kick things off by talking about the cycles of relationship, these three main phases, and they are connection, disconnection, and repair. We're going to talk more about what these mean, and we're really going to have an emphasis today on repair and why that's so important. When couples lack the ability to repair with one another, they really set themselves up for failure. It's one of the main reasons that relationships don't work out, because couples don't know how to repair. They don't know how to reconnect, which is a big deal. When things feel good, we're connected. Everything's all right. We understand each other. When we become disconnected, there are a number of ways that this can happen. We might say something that upsets, stresses out, hurts our partner, but we can also just be stressed or overwhelmed with other aspects of our life, which can cause us to disconnect, not be present, not be attuned, not be curious about one another, and essentially move into protective strategies to defend ourselves. To protect ourselves against negative outcomes or prevent our fears from coming true. So it's a really big deal that we learn how to repair. And the extent to which we learn how to do that really determines the outcome of our relationship and the level of satisfaction that we have in it. So let's talk about connection. We all know what it's like to feel good. I hope that all of you listening know what it's like to feel good. So you've got a benchmark to compare to when things are not so good, or in extreme situations to be able to identify abusive, toxic patterns. Maybe, hey, this is kind of a red flag for me. This is an issue. I need to talk about this. All of that stuff that feels negative, hurtful, harmful, dangerous, that's not connection. You know, connection, a state of connection is, wow, we really get each other. We are attuned. There's basically the sense of feeling gotten, that I get you and you get me, and that that's happening simultaneously. So it's a feeling of being on the same page. This includes feeling safe, not just with our physiological needs like shelter, food, water, but safe that there's truthfulness here. Okay, like we can hang in there with each other. We're consistent, reliable people for one another. We're integrous. So, you know, when we say we're going to do something, we follow through, we do that, that we both show up as the people that we say that we are. No lying, deceit, manipulation. That's all part of, you know, creating safety with each other, the trust, the integrity, and so on. So when we're connected, things feel secure, calm, relaxed, easy breezy. And what we don't want to experience is disconnection. We don't want to feel that sense of not being understood. You don't get me. I don't make sense to you. And, you know, it's like there's this misunderstanding between us. You don't get where I'm coming from. And so we don't feel good. Things don't always feel okay, you know, when we're disconnected. And we might feel unsafe, which doesn't mean that there's an imminent threat to our livelihood or to our survival, but just things feel a little off, a little rocky. I don't feel like things are totally okay right now because of something that's going on. All of this is part of disconnection. So it's going to happen for all of us, even if we both aspire to be amazing partners for each other, even if we want to be allies in each other's healing and growth, we're going to have these moments of disconnection and misunderstanding because we're not perfect and we have a certain capacity for information, for tasks, for workload. You know, we can become overwhelmed and stressed, even, you know, if we're getting after our aspirational goals, something can happen in life, a tragedy, upset, something is very disappointing to us. Maybe we fall short of expectations in some way. The point is we're not always going to be perfectly present or perfectly attuned. Okay. So let's not set ourselves up for failure by having grand expectations. Understand that disconnection is going to happen. We want to reduce the frequency of that disconnection. We want to commit to positive behavior changes. We want to make progress in our life and in our relationship. And so all of that matters, obviously, for you and your partner. You got to agree about what's important. And it can be helpful to just understand that we got these phases, these cycles, connection, disconnection, repair. And we need to learn how to do that. So in order to talk more about repair today, I want to talk a little bit more about how we actually become disconnected. So one of the main phenomenons here is that we have interactions in our relationship that drive us. It's like this lightning quick reaction that we can get so focused on what's happening for us that we become self-absorbed. Or maybe our partner is behaving in a way, or they think in a way, or they have certain beliefs that, you know, are different than ours. And that occurs as dangerous to us. Our brain codes difference as danger, which creates anxiety. We have a tendency to get negative with our partner so that we don't have to feel that anxiety. We've talked about that pattern a little bit before, and we're going to continue to talk about it because of how common it is. And I want to just continue to drive this point home. One way of thinking about connection is that true connection is that I'm connected to who you are and your difference while maintaining who I am. So just because you're different, I don't make that mean I have to submit my identity or my values or my worldview. I don't descend into a personal abyss in my psyche because you're a little bit different than me. And there are differences that certainly could cause a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of upset. You know, maybe one person wants to go clubbing 7 nights a week, and the other person needs their partner to show up in a reliable way, maybe to be up early to take care of a child or the home or another dependent, a dog, a cat, and that you want to feel some consistency. Or maybe you want to just go to bed at the same time as your partner. You want to cuddle with them. You want to share quality time or you know, moments together. You want your partner to be present. I'm not going to get too far into the weeds on that example because there's just so many different versions of that same story. If you got those kinds of differences that are really stressing you out, okay, you know, we need to create agreements. We need to come to a shared vision of reality and of our future. What kind of life do we want to create together? What would be like meaningful for us? And if we got these differences right now, is there some new possibility that we could create that would be exciting, that we both could lean into? So part of this experience of connection, apart from some of the extremes, is really just honoring each other's differences. Instead of believing that, you know, our partner should be exactly like us and do things exactly the way that we want them to do it all the time. You know, how can we really honor each other's difference and acknowledge that our differences is kind of what drew us together in the first place? It's part of the polarity. It's part of the attraction. One person's more emotional. One person's more logical. Someone's better with money. Maybe someone takes better care of their body. One person is a little bit more confident than the other. And we have a lot to learn. You know, we have these traits and qualities that we can also reclaim for ourselves, that we can develop in ourselves. So we can be connected to our partner's differences and not take that personally or have it be a threat to our life force or our identity. And in the earliest stages of relationship, connection is easier because we're focused on the similarities between us and our partner. And we're also high on our neurochemical supply. Our body is pumping out chemicals to help us create a strong bond for the journey ahead. And man, do we need all the help we can get. So yes, our partner's differences can be threatening to us, but there is a difference between their choice to be a vegetarian and their choice to lie, cheat, steal, and betray. Some differences are deal breakers, but most of them require us to honor our differences and be open to our partner's different perspectives, political opinions, and preferences without it becoming a train wreck for us emotionally. So there is a specific pathway that leads to disconnection in these experiences. And it's basically that we experience pain, hurt, or stress in some way, which could come from outside of our relationship or within it. And we become defensive or offensive to protect ourselves from our fears coming true, from something happening that we don't want to happen. And as soon as this plays out, we get self-absorbed and we lose sense of the other. One example that I often give to describe this is that experience you have when you're on vacation. Maybe you book a trip to Mexico, you're in the sun feeling good, and you drop your bags, you get there, you're walking along the sandy beach and you step on something sharp. There's this small stimulus there, you know, something sharp, ouch, all your attention immediately goes to that source of pain, immediately goes to the wound. You're focused on that. Am I okay? Am I bleeding? Do I need medical attention? What was that that I stepped on? Can I protect other people from this and move it out of the way? And the same thing happens psychologically in our relationships. We get a stimulus, maybe just a little pinprick, and we can have a big reaction to that. And we can be motivated to protect ourselves in certain ways. But the point is we get self-absorbed. All of our attention is on us. We're no longer being curious and we lose sense of the other. There is a technical term for this. It's called emotional symbiosis. And this disconnection, you know, it occurs when we disagree. Yeah. You know, when we hurt each other or when something upsetting happens. And it's like this bubble bursting, you know, it's like a rupture. Everything was okay. And then, oh, like what happened? You know, disconnection also occurs when we get stressed out, overwhelmed with aspects of our life that might not have anything to do with our partner. Like I said before, work, money, family. And we notice each other's differences and we can get focused on something that we don't like. We can get fixated. So we got this emotional symbiosis that occurs. We get hurt, stressed, upset, defensive or offensive to protect ourselves, like lightning quick, that happens. We get self-absorbed, focused on us. We're no longer sensing our partner because all of our attention is on us and our outcomes and protecting our survival, which is not just about physical survival, but the survival of other biological imperatives, like our need to explore, our need to be us, for it to be okay to be us, our need to make our own choices in life and decide what's important. There are many different imperatives that go beyond just physical survival. And when we have this experience of difference between us, we object to difference. When we object, we get negative and we don't want to feel the stress. We don't want to feel the pressure or the anxiety. And we typically default to using negativity to get our partner to change. And that could be shame, blame, put downs, criticisms, withdrawal, withholding, avoidance. But these strategies don't work well, even though part of our brain thinks that it does. Negativity is really just the adult form of the infant's cry. So, you know, we're trying to express something to get our need met, but we just don't really know how to do it in an empowered, mature way. So we got the put downs, the criticism, the blaming and shaming. We got these offensive, defensive, protective strategies. And some other ones that come with this could be chasing, clinginess, manipulation. On the flip side, avoidance, rigidity, withdrawal. And we're almost always attracted to someone that uses the opposite strategies to us. The avoidant person falls in love with the anxious person. The one who withdraws is with the one who pursues. The one who withholds is with the one who might exaggerate their emotions. And the person that tends to detach or shut down, they want to marry the person who hangs on tight and leans in. And we don't do this consciously. It's actually an unconscious motivation. So let's talk a little bit about opposites attract. In general, two people are attracted to one another because they have the traits and characteristics to make it work. And we're like magnets in this way. We might have a hard time getting close to someone that has a same polarity as us. So whether you want to talk yin and yang, masculine, feminine, avoidant, anxious, male, female, you know, there's a polarity between couples. And two avoidant people, for example, they generally don't make it that far in relationship. They might not even be that attracted to each other in the first place because they just kind of push each other away. And the relationship doesn't really even get started, doesn't get off the ground. But there's a deeper psychological reality to this. And one of the things, you know, we can say here to help you understand is that at your core, you've really got four functioning centers. And this is sensing and feeling and thinking and acting. Sensing, feeling, thinking, acting. And based on our experience as individuals in our family system and in society, we often develop certain strengths, superpowers, if you will. There are parts of us that are nurtured, developed, and encouraged, and there are parts of us that might be put down or shamed or not emphasized. You know, parents can't teach us something that they don't know how to do, but society also emphasizes certain patterns, whether it's gender roles and stereotypes, or just certain behaviors are not encouraged or they're disincentivized. This can all shape how we develop. So the theory here is that some people come out of childhood being more of a sensor and a feeler, more empathic, more attuned, maybe more intuitive in some ways. And other people can come out of childhood being more of the thinker and the actor, more focused on logic. And the way that this happens is wide and varied. What I want you to understand is that this goes on, and it's likely that in your relationship, you might lean more one way. One of you might be the more emotional person who feels a lot, and one of you might be the more logical person who thinks a lot. And there's something complementary about this. There's this deeper psychological reality that our unconscious is actually drawn to someone that has these different skill sets and these different abilities. They're complementary to us, but the difference can be disturbing. You know, the fact that my partner struggles to think through this clearly because they get so emotional could occur to us, for example, as wrong and be like, what is going on here? You know, how come my partner can't handle reality? What's the deal? And they just don't make sense to us in a certain way. All the while, you know, we can make a judgment like that, missing the fact that actually we're lacking the ability to empathize in a certain context. We have difficulty being curious in that moment because we start to feel a little bit anxious by the expression of their emotion, depending on how big that gets. And another way of thinking of this is someone who emotes like a storm cloud with a lot of energy, they might exaggerate their emotions. They might be willing to talk to people about things, get support from their friends, raise their hand and ask questions. That kind of person can pair up with somebody who is a little bit more internal. Maybe they actually withhold their feelings and their thoughts, and they keep things inside and work things through on their own. They're more independent. And both of these ways of being have strengths. They have their gifts, and they also can have downsides as well. So just coming back to tie this together, opposites attract. We can have someone who's more of the sensor and the feeler paired up with someone who's more of the thinker and the actor. And one of the key concepts here from Imago relationship theory is that we pick someone to help us grow. This idea is not exclusive to Imago. There are many couples therapists and different thinking on relationships that essentially teaches the same idea, which is that our unconscious mind recognizes the lost parts of ourself in the other. We pick a partner that's holding a missing puzzle piece for us. We pick a partner that can help us grow. We pick a partner that can help us heal and reclaim parts of ourselves that were underdeveloped or undernurtured along the way. So I'll give you a stereotypical example. There's an idea, an old cliche, that boys don't cry, right? Young man, better suck it up, get it together, hold your head up. And there's certainly some wisdom in being resilient in life and not letting everything knock you down and collapse into helplessness. But within this thing around boys don't cry, there can be this feeling of hesitancy to be vulnerable. There can be shame around feeling big emotions or crying. And we get certain archetypes in society, like the Marlboro man, the stoic, who is cold, maybe fearless, and bold, maybe a Clint Eastwood type character. And that's an archetype. I think that, to be a human being, we all understand that, you have hard days. You have things that knock you down. We're actually a lot more vulnerable than just the cold, hard cowboy who's unaffected by everything. We actually do feel a lot. We are sensitive to stuff, and things matter, And if we just walk into the sunset alone, every time there's a conflict or something we don't like, we end up being alone. Man and the horse with his man in the desert with his horse. So, for people in modern times, you get it, right? We're sensitive. It's okay for men to cry. But many of us are raised in environments where we get these cultural ideas and we get certain things in our family system as well that shape part of this pattern around these lost parts, these parts of ourselves that were underdeveloped or undernurtured. And we pair up with someone who really has got that online. So for me, I'm the person that's more logical. I'm the person that can just work things through in my own mind. I might minimize negative experiences. So if something bad happens, if we spill the milk, so to speak, I might say, okay, no big deal. Let's clean it up. And depending on what the issue is, if it's personal to my partner, she can make a big deal out of it. Like, I just went to the store and bought that. That's a trivial example, but the point is that, we can react differently. And we don't have time today to go through all the details of our childhood to put this together to tell you more about why we became the way that we are. But it's important that you're able to recognize this, notice this, get curious about this in your relationship. Who's the more emotional person? Who's the more logical person? How can we use our strengths to work together? How can we develop ourselves as people? Acknowledge our deficits, acknowledge the maybe weak points we might have in our character or our ability, and not use those differences to tear each other down, but to recognize the growth opportunity that's within that dynamic. So there's a bigger agenda here for our relationships, which goes beyond simply attaining love, simply attaining a partner to hold hands with. And that agenda is about growth, healing, and repair. Harville Hendricks believes that our entire unconscious motivation for being in an adult relationship is to heal and finalize unfinished business from the past. And I mention Harville because he's had a big impact on my work. A lot of the ideas that I talk about are from Imago Theory. That is the therapy training I'm certified in. And it's not just that he believes this stuff. I have come to believe this too, from what I've seen in my relationship, from the patterns that have come up, the difficult moments that we've had to navigate. I have found this to be true. So what I'd love is for you not to take my word for it, that this is the case, but get curious and discover if this is true for you. And if you can see these patterns at play, and if you can take on this growth mindset of repairing the past. And part of that means we have to learn how to repair things now, today, in our adult relationships with our partner and with our friends. Couples need to know this so that they can actually move through the power struggle. They need to get this approach, this philosophy, in order to work through the power struggle dynamic that we all experience once the honeymoon phase is over. And we need to actually have the experience of doing that in order to truly get it. So we've got to have this experiential moment in our relationship where we see that this isn't just a made up idea, that this is actually happening. And this matters because we have a tendency to recreate negative scenes in our relationship, specifically negative scenes from our childhood. And couples recreate core traumatic scenes because they're unresolved in the psyche. And the psyche is timeless. So just because something happened 30 years ago doesn't mean that it won't be activated or present today in some way. It can be triggered, you know? And we're often missing that. We're missing the historical context, which drives our frustration or our sadness or our anger. And because we're missing that, our partner's missing that, and they don't totally get why certain things are important to us, you know, why certain subjects matter so much. And this goes to my next point, which is that we all bring an unmet need from childhood into our adult relationships. You know, our psyche hasn't forgotten about the people that were supposed to protect us and be there for us and sometimes let us down or outright hurt us or abused us, because they didn't know any better and they just learned from their parents. And this is all part of our inheritance that we don't want, you know, it gets passed down the line. So part of this thing about our unmet need from childhood, part of this historical context that drives our reactivity today is a really big deal, because when something happens in our adult relationship that we don't like, apology is often not enough. If I just say I'm sorry, my partner still might not understand why I did that. Why did I react that way? Who can I trust my partner? Why did they do that? Like, what's this all about? You start sensing that your partner's reaction is turned up way too high for the genre of music. It's like it doesn't fit. It doesn't match. Why did my partner go into crisis mode over this small thing? So we need to make more sense of why each of us responds to stimulus and stress the way that we do. And we need to know more about what drives our reactivity. We need to know more about each other's childhood pain and experience, our past experience, because that is part of what motivates us to become defensive or offensive in the first place. So one key takeaway from today's conversation is, what is the thing you wanted and needed most as a child but didn't get? What is the thing you wanted and needed the most as a child and didn't get? It can be tough to answer. It can be especially difficult for people to answer this question because they're actually partly in denial about what went on in their childhood home. And there is a certain person that can develop more of an avoidant approach or strategy to life, which minimizes things and downplays dynamics. It's like, no big deal, whatever, all good. And they can miss actually part of the reality. So they're not connected to the reality of the situation of what went on. It's like, it was a little hard. Mom and dad hit us sometimes, but, you know, we had lots of fun and, you know, we had food in the fridge and gifts under the tree at Christmas. And they can be missing how some of that behavior at home might actually have been abusive and had a bigger role on them than they realize. And it can take time to peel back those layers of the onion. So some of you are going to be really clear about this. You know, the thing I needed the most, well, is just the ability to be myself. Or, I really wish my parents were more curious about me. Or I wish I had some consistency and reliability. I wish we had peace in the house. You know, I wish that there was more trust, more attunement. There's all kinds of different things you might come up with. But where this question is going is basically that thing that you wanted and needed the most, you're still yearning for now. Part of your psyche wants to experience that in your adult relationship. And it's likely that your partner has a hard time giving it to you. So a couple episodes back, we talked about some of the patterns in relationship. We talked about how the thing that your partner wants the most from you is often the hardest thing for you to give. And that is part of this core dynamic, the sensor and the feeler, the thinker and the actor, the polarity between us, the unconscious motivation to heal and finalize unfinished business from the past is connected to this dynamic. And that thing that you wanted and needed that you've brought to your adult relationship that maybe you weren't aware of, you didn't realize you'd been holding on to this thing. You didn't realize you've been looking at your partner saying, I want you to give this to me. Why can't you give this to me? And you don't recognize that actually it's very similar or it's identical to what you needed and wanted the most as a child. And that's why it is also a major key to your healing, development, and growth now. So this is where I'm going to leave you for today. This takeaway question. And next week, we're going to dive back into this conversation on repair because there is a lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about how couples can properly repair. What are some tactical, practical things you can do? And how can we take some of the insights from this conversation today and apply them effectively? I created my show with the audience in mind, which means no ads, sponsors, or wasting your time. And one request I got for you is if you're enjoying this podcast, leave a 5-star review. It is more helpful for me than it is painful for you and helps get this show on people's radar and on the charts. And ultimately helps more people in creating relationships that are meaningful to them. So thanks in advance for checking it out. We'll see you next week.